This is Mark Strassman, a reporter with MIMO World. We're about to speak to Ira Brodsky, who is the president of a Datacom research company in St. Louis. Welcome to MIMO World.
Thank you.
You've just put out a white paper here titled MIMO Technology is Today's Most Significant Advance in Wireless Communications, but not all MIMO claims are accurate. Why don't you tell our listeners what MIMO is?
Okay. Well, in a wireless communications environment, signals are traveling in free space, and they can bounce off of buildings, off of the ground, even off of the layers of the atmosphere. And this has actually been a problem for wireless communication systems up until recently, because these many reflected signals all arrive at the receiver but at different times, and they tend to, let's say, blur the signal that appears at the receiver.
So it's kind of cluttered there at the receiver.
Exactly. And, you know, we're basically at about the 100-year mark from the time when radio was invented.
Right.
For that first century, what everybody's tried to do is repair the problem, or the favorite term they use is mitigate.
Right.
What's called multipath propagation.
Okay.
And a new technology has been developed in the last 5-10 years that would actually view those multiple signals as an opportunity as opposed to a problem and harness them to send more information within the same frequency channel. So in essence, MIMO is a way of multiplying the efficiency of the radio spectrum.
So in fact, it sends different data through the multiple paths.
Exactly.
And it becomes additive rather than disruptive.
Or it would even be more accurate to say it becomes multiplicative.
Right. Okay. So did one person have this conceptual breakthrough to say this is an opportunity and not a problem?
I think there have been a number, you know, the way a lot of these technologies emerge these days is that people kind of, slowly arrive at this sort of thing, and different people do different work. I'd say the one person that I know of who kind of tied it all together and really has been championing the idea is Dr. Greg Rawley of Ergo Networks, but certainly there have been others who have contributed to this.
So when they say who's the father of MIMO, it's Greg Rawley is the closest thing we can get.
To my knowledge, yes.
Okay. This obviously has the capacity to greatly increase the speed, bandwidth, and reliability of wireless networks.
Correct.
By how much?
Well, we're seeing in some of the initial products, for example, in the wireless LAN segment, we're seeing products that can run 3 or 4 times the range of existing standards. We're seeing in wireless metropolitan area networks, you know, sort of building to building, rooftop to rooftop, we're seeing products that are running, again, 3 or 4 times the speed at the same range.
Okay, that's pretty good.
These are significant improvements. Often when we look at new technologies, it's an incremental improvement, 20 to 30%, and that's quite legitimate and can be very important depending on the applications. But this technology, this is perhaps one of those major paradigm shifts.
Right.
Sort of like the transition from analog cellular to digital that really blew open the market. And I think MIMO has potential to do the same thing.
Okay, now we haven't actually spelled out what this acronym stands for. It's MIMO, and that stands for what?
Multiple inputs, multiple output.
Okay, and how does that figure in to what we've just been talking about? Where are the multiple inputs? Where are the multiple outputs?
Well, if you're going to communicate, if you're going to take these multipath signals and send data, different data over different multipath signals over the same radio link, then what you need are multiple transmitters, multiple receivers, and multiple antennas
okay.
at both ends.
Right.
Now that sounds like, boy, that could be a very big price to pay. But keep in mind today with integrated circuit technology that radio functions can be done in software as can transmitters to some extent. And so it's not quite, 20 years ago this would have been the cost of doing this would have made one hesitate to even bother. But today, both in terms of the integration and also the processing that can be done, makes it much more attractive.
Okay. Now, these multiple paths that go from the transmitter to the receiver, are they infinite, finite, and are they determined by the topography of the situation in which the units are being used?
I think in practical terms, they're finite, and certainly they're the result of the conditions. So there are some environments where you've got a lot of multipath, others where you have less, but you always have some. And then there are also environments where, you know, an indoor environment, you're going to have a lot of bouncing off of walls and things where the differences in the path lengths may be much smaller, whereas outdoors you may have bigger differences.
So this is particularly well suited for interior use.
Well, we know so far that it's very well suited to wireless LAN applications, indoor applications. We also know that it's very well suited to point-to-point to fixed outdoor applications. We don't know quite as much about how much of an advantage it'll deliver in a mobile environment, but you know, based on what we've seen in wireless LAN and in fixed metropolitan area applications, the question doesn't seem to be will it deliver an advantage in the mobile environment, but simply how big of an advantage, and you know, it might be that it varies.
Okay. Now, does this varies according to the topography of the situation,
which or whether the user is moving, or where they happen to be at a particular moment in relation to the cell site?
So it's already established as very effective for in a coffee house, in a house, or for fixed wireless. And the question now that remains to be seen is whether for mobile wireless, it's going to be equally effective.
Right.
How does this fit in with the A, B, and G story for 802.11?
Well, actually, the 802.11 group understands that this is a powerful technology and is where a lot of future development belongs. And so there has been a task group already set up called the 802.11n.
Right.
Which is developing a standard which everyone, I think, pretty much assumes that this will be at the core of that standard. And now it's down to two major proposals, and they're both basically different versions of MIMO OFDM, it's called.
Okay. What are the names attached to those two different proposals?
One's called WWISE, and the other is called TGN Sync.
TGM?
No, TGN.
TGN Sync.
Right.
And the first one was what?
WWISE. WWISE.
Okay. And are those how do those differ?
I haven't studied them in great detail, but they seem to be very similar, actually. There are some differences, particularly in what they're spelling out in terms of an optional capability. They both specify what you can do in a 20 megahertz channel. And then there's some differences in options in terms of going to even higher speeds in wider channels.
So these are essentially competing proposals for the 802.11n standard, but both are based on MIMO technology.
Exactly.
So presumably one or the other will be adopted, or some kind of best practices from the two will be combined.
Yeah, compromise.
What's the timetable for that? Who's in charge of it? The making that decision. What group?
Well. I'm not sure how I could define who's in charge of it. I mean, the committee has been established, and so it's now doing its work.
Right.
And I think it's expected that they'll finalize specification sometime next year, and that would usually mean that within about a year after that, you could have products based on the standard. However, there are already products on the market that are obviously non-standard or pre-standard, and that's something of a controversy, but
right.
There are products out there today that use this technology.
Those products are called pre-N?
Correct.
And could you be specific about which one have WWIS and which have TGN Sync? All of them implement one or the other of those systems, right?
Well, I think the only pre-end products, I hope I'm correct about which one of the groups, I believe that is the WYs group.
Right.
And I think the other group, and, you know, that's really a vendor issue, not a...
Right.
It has nothing to do with the proposals.
Right, okay. What does Ergo use?
Which of the standards?
Right.
Or proposals? I believe that they are part of the WYs, but they are the only chipset maker that I know of that's delivering this today.
They're the only chipset maker.
Right, so that means that the products, the wireless LAN products that are doing MIMO OFDM are all using Ergo's chipset.
And therefore using the WWIS, or the WYs.
If my recollection of which group Ergo is in is correct, yes.
Okay. Is that going to give it a lead in deciding what happens, or will the decision makers use a more abstract and less market-driven approach? Do you know? Can you say anything?
Well, you know, these committees are usually as much political as based on engineering.
Right.
And I would say the fact that Ergo and its OEM customers have products, in and of itself, that does not decide which way they're going to go.
Right.
But if there is a major controversy, a major technical controversy that erupts, and it could be demonstrated that the products in the field solve that problem satisfactorily, that would put a lot of pressure on the committee to at least adopt those aspects. But I think what you'll see ultimately is a compromise. There seem to be major players supporting both of the proposals.
Right.
You've got Ergo and I believe Broadcom and others in the one group, and Intel and Qualcomm and other major players in the other group. So it's pretty well
balanced
distributed in terms of having some heavy hitters on both sides.
Heavy hitters on both sides. So you're saying that it's likely that the standard would be a compromise rather than one or the other.
Right.
Okay. And who uses the Ergo pre-end chipsets now and has products out there?
I believe Linksys.
A Cisco company.
Right. SohoWare and Belkin.
Okay. Those three companies?
There may be one or two others, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay. And what happens if there's a wide deployment of that Ergo pre-end chipset implementing the WYs standard, and then another the compromise modifies that to some extent? What's going to happen then?
Well, you know, there's a number of different possible scenarios here, and one would be that if these products really take off, that would put a lot of pressure on the committee to not make the final specification, you know, too different from the products that are succeeding, that have already succeeded in the field.
Right.
Because it's not the purpose of these committees to disenfranchise customers who have already invested in something.
Right.
On the other hand, if the number of customers is not that big yet, certainly the committee should not feel that it has to bend to whoever happened to have been first. But
right.
You know, I think you'll see that this often happens when standards are developed. If a technology really takes root before the specifications are finished, then usually these committees understand that they have to at least acknowledge that there's been a success and that it's now both in the interest of the industry and end users to make sure that the standard is not hostile to people who have already invested in these products. But if it turns out that the standard is completed before there's a really large installed base, then, you know, there's another analysis here, which is that for the customers who invested in the pre-end product, they made the decision that they had an urgent application, and since standard products probably won't be around for another 2 years or so, you know, it may be well worth it for them to buy new products then, replace what they invested in, or keep what they have, depending upon how important it is for them to have interoperability with new devices.
Right. So when a company or an individual is trying to decide whether to invest in pre and now, not only would they get the better capability for the next 2 years, but the more of them that do that, the more likely it is that that will become the standard.
Well, that's true, although as an individual customer, you have no control over the latter.
Right.
But certainly, I think the key thing here is that if you're a customer and you have an application today where this would benefit, I think some people espouse the idea that customers should never buy products that don't adhere to a recognized standard.
Right.
And it's not that simple anymore.
Right.
Because when vendors come out with these new capabilities, they often do it in the context of a product that is fully compatible with the existing standards.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing with these products. So it's not like they're really totally proprietary. They have this one enhanced mode, which is proprietary because, at a minimum at least, that the standard hasn't been completed. But they're not completely proprietary. They're not. It's not like these products are not interoperable with existing wireless LAN standards.
It's a little like fuzzy standards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole issue of standards, it used to be very cut and dry. You have proprietary products, and there was hostility between those and standard products.
VHS.
Vendors have gotten smart about this.
Right.
And, you know, they try to beat the competition to market, but in doing so, they try to build as many bridges in to the existing standard so that it makes it easy for everybody.
Right. And, in fact, if this is really a powerful disruptive technology that does a lot for the customers, they'll make so much more money they'll be able to buy the new ones later anyway. With the money they save or make based on the more powerful technology they'll get to use for 2 years.
Exactly. And there's actually even another interesting wrinkle on this, which is that once you build the circuitry to do MIMO, now you've got circuitry that can do other tricks. And so it turns out that when you're operating in the fallback modes of the existing standards, like 802.11b and G,
right.
You could actually use that MIMO circuitry, even if it's only present at one end of the link,
right.
To basically create what's called a smart antenna.
Right.
And although that doesn't multiply spectral efficiency the way that MIMO does, it can incrementally improve the performance of the link. So, interestingly, you've got this non-standard product that, when it falls back to work with existing standard products, it actually can make those existing standards perform even better.
Exactly. So that's another incentive. Okay, let's sort of wrap up by focusing on the point of the paper that your organization just put out about the difference between MIMO and pseudo-MIMO and why that's important. Who is it who defines MIMO, and how do you define it?
Well, you know, I think the way that MIMO needs to be defined is kind of on two planes. One is just theoretically, what is the definition that really encapsulates the primary advance here? And
right.
Then the other is, from a practical standpoint, how do the majority of R&D engineers and academic researchers define it? And so the point that we made in our research alert, and we called it an alert because we're going to be releasing two larger studies that will touch on this in the next 30 days or so.
Okay.
But the main point is that a MIMO system is not just is not a smart antenna simply. It actually sends multiple signals over the same frequency channel, whereas smart antennas use multiple antennas as a way of getting better performance out of a single signal. Another way of putting it is that smart antennas operate in one dimension, and genuine MIMO systems operate in multiple dimensions.
Does that essentially mean that let's say we're streaming video from a server or from one unit to another? Does that tell us what happens to the signal that comes off of the processing the signal processing chip is? Is that signal, instead of just going out over one stream, being divided into multiple streams, and each of those maybe it's every three streams with every third bit or some other parsing technique, so that parts of the file are being sent simultaneously but over the same frequency?
I think your analogy is a good one. My understanding, and I'm not actually an engineer, is that it's a little bit more either complex or subtle, however you'd like to put it, than
right.
that. In other words, I've asked that same question. I can't quite nail it down to something that simple.
Right.
I think what's going on is that there's mathematical processing that goes on, computation that goes on at both ends of the link.
Right.
And what it really comes down to is that you have this high-speed bitstream, just as you've suggested, and that mathematically there's formulas that determine where the bits go, and
right.
it's probably just a little bit simplistic to say that every third bit goes to, you know, is divided between three different signals.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's something like that.
So it's a little like compression, except more complicated.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more complicated
or different.
It's another way. It's a way of encoding the data.
Right.
And it may be something. It's probably just something where you can't really identify in some straightforward way, where you can't predict exactly where each bit is going to end up.
Does it use any kind of esoteric mathematical uncertainty principle kind of things?
That would be beyond my understanding, but I think it really just comes down to I do know it uses matrix algebra.
Right.
And so from my feeble recollection of that from college, you know, there may be some very different ways that these bits get distributed between these different signals.
Okay.
But, you know, it may even shift depending upon the channel conditions.
But it essentially packages the data in an innovative way so that it can be sent, more of it can be sent faster, and when it gets to the receiver, it's decoded from that.
Bottom line is that if you could run 50 megabits per second with one signal, here's a technology that would allow you to run, you know, potentially 150 or 200 megabits per second using multiple signals. But exactly how those bits are distributed between those signals, I'm not exactly sure, and it's probably not just a simple, you know, kind of like dealing a hand in poker where you just go from one to the other with each bit.
Okay, but it's very established that it works.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so what's the danger that you're warning against here about this pseudo-MIMO, and what kind of problems could that create, and why is it important that the distinction be understood by everyone?
Well, on the surface, if you look at a MIMO product, it's going to have multiple antennas, and there are lots of products, especially in the wireless LAN segment today, that have multiple antennas. And so we have to be very clear on the fact, and this is both to preserve the development of this technology and consumers' ability to recognize it,
right,
that just because a product has multiple antennas, you know, that could be a sign that it's doing what's called diversity or beamforming, or it could be a sign that it's doing MIMO, but those are different things. They're qualitatively different.
What's beamforming?
Beamforming is just using multiple antennas or antenna elements to kind of focus the signal energy, just a way of getting more efficiency out of the transmission path.
Do most transceivers that have two antennas, is one used for receiving and one for transmitting?
No, typically in most of the products where you see that, they're doing what's called diversity. They have two antennas so that as they're receiving the information, if it's you know, this multipath propagation results in what's called fading.
Right.
That's when signals that are 180 degrees out of phase because they've arrived slightly apart in time,
right,
they actually will, if they're 180 degrees out of phase, they actually start canceling each other out.
Right.
And so if you have multiple antennas that are spaced apart at least a certain minimum distance, you can always avoid that cancellation effect. You can choose to concentrate on the signal that's coming in on one of those two antennas.
So you're essentially sending the same signal through the two antennas. If some of them turn out to be exactly 180 degrees off another packet, it'll destroy it, but the other one won't be, and so you'll get that information.
Right.
Okay, and that's different from real MIMO because of what?
Because MIMO actually transmits multiple signals Although it requires multiple antennas and may look the same from the outside of the package, it's a dramatically different. It's really the difference between a nice and not to be discounted enhancement like diversity,
right,
and a paradigm shift, a more qualitative improvement in performance like MIMO.
Now, will consumers be alerted to this by everyone? Are there some mechanisms in the system to make sure people know what they're getting?
Well, that's exactly why we put out this alert. Already we've seen some vendors kind of hint that they've got products that provide MIMO benefits or MIMO-like performance, and I don't dispute that per se, but I think they have to be more careful about the use of the term. I think that it's important to make it clear whether you're actually using MIMO or doing something else that you feel may be able to deliver similar results, but in a different way.
And so is there going to be a body that has the trademark of MIMO that can decide, the MIMO Institute that decides something is or isn't, and certificates it and puts a logo on it?
Well, that's certainly an idea, and certainly when the 802.11n standard is published, that will be one way of doing that.
Right.
But there may be it's still early. These products have just the first MIMO products, genuine MIMO products, have just come to market recently, and just important not to let this get out of hand, where everybody starts saying that they have something that is comparable, starts to make end users think that either there's no real difference, or it's impossible to know which product really is using MIMO.
Right. Is there a significant financial advantage to be accrued by people who haven't put in the R&D to make real MIMO and who want to call their products MIMO?
Well, I mean, there certainly is that possibility. I think it just really comes down to it's a natural part of competition that every vendor is going to try to present their product in the best possible light, and I don't quibble with that, and I'm someone who's usually pretty tolerant of vendor claims as long as they're in the ballpark, but I think it's important, obviously, not to exaggerate beyond what a reasonable person would consider truthful, and I think it's important when there's a new technology not to confuse people about what it is.
Right. I can just this very discussion we've been having now, I'm looking at a press release here from Netgear, and it refers to wireless products based on the breakthrough True MIMO trademark chipset from Argo Networks. So apparently Argo has addressed this issue by trademarking True MIMO as the name of their chipset.
Right.
So that's.
But that is a vendor specific action.
Right.
And you were asking about something that the industry might do.
Right. And that'll go in one of the ways that we've just talked about.
But certainly their use of that term, and their the fact that. Dr. Greg Rawley is the CEO of Ergo.
Right.
They're certainly, obviously, they have a strong interest in seeing that the term is used properly, and they're already working on that or promoting that idea. But the question is, how will the industry as a whole behave? And I think the 802.11 standard, 11N standard, will ultimately, kind of bring everybody back to where they should be. But up until then, there may be some fudging of the terminology.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up by talking about how Datacom Research Company figures into this discussion and what the role you see for yourself in trying to get this discussion running and make people more aware of that. And what does Datacom Research Company do, and what say a little bit about that for our listeners?
Sure. We're a consulting and publishing, market research and technology research, publishing company, and the reason we're interested in, particularly in this area, is we concentrate on wireless technologies, and so we publish reports for network operators, manufacturers, but also investment bankers and major end user organizations to help them understand emerging technologies, what they can do, what their limitations are, how the markets are likely to evolve, how the technologies are likely to evolve. And we see MIMO OFDM as a key technology that is not only going to be important in wireless LANs, but also wireless MANs, as I mentioned before, and certainly also in mobile phone networks. So we're working on some new reports that look at this in more detail in terms of how these markets will evolve, when they're going to be adopting this technology, what advantages, how can we quantify the advantages that will be delivered.
So essentially to help investors decide where to invest and customers to decide where to buy.
Right, exactly.
Is this technology applicable then to both cellular and broadband wireless internet systems?
Yes.
Okay, and it's going to be used in both types of wireless communications.
Well, we know that it's already being used in wireless LANs in fixed metropolitan area. It hasn't been decided per se that MIMO will be used in mobile environments, to my knowledge, but I think everybody is clearly looking at that, who's involved in the kind of the next generation technologies, and we think that even if its advantages are strongest in indoor environments, that it clearly has advantages outdoors, and there may be certain moments when the advantage is minimal, but there will be other moments when it's more pronounced. So
right.
We think it'll probably end up being also a major part of future mobile technologies.
And what about for WiMAX?
Well, WiMAX is an obvious possibility because WiMAX is already defined around OFDM, and it turns out that MIMO is easiest to implement with OFDM, but it can be implemented with other technologies like CDMA,
right,
which is the basis for all the 3G wireless mobile phone networks.
Okay. And so is this likely to make a super WiMAX possible?
Certainly could enhance WiMAX, but it could also enhance 3G networks or become the 4G standard for mobile phone networks.
Okay, and it is also useful for what's sometimes called pre-WiMAX or fixed wireless.
Right.
And it has. Is anyone using that yet?
There's a company called Orthogon Systems that is using MIMO in point-to-point links.
Oh, okay. Orthogon Systems.
Yeah, and they have a new product that they're claiming will deliver 300 million bits per second in a 30 megahertz channel.
Right.
And that comes out to 10 bits per hertz.
Right.
In spectral efficient 10 bits per second per hertz.
Right.
In spectral efficiency, and that's a level of spectral efficiency that you cannot obtain without using MIMO, as far as I know.
Okay. Maybe I'll go talk to them as soon as we hang up.
Okay.
Thank you very much for all this information, and I hope we can maybe talk again in the future as the standards are settled upon and more products are delivered and the standard becomes more widespread, but it'll always be important that people know they're getting the real thing. I think Hammurabi even had provisions in his code, the first legal code that we know about, of that complexity that made sure people got what they were paying for, and that's the same issue here, I think, and I'm glad you've been able to bring it up to date for us.
Well, I'm glad that this is following in a 3,000-4,000 year tradition.
At least that long, yes. Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay,
we'll talk to you later. Don't hang up, though. Let me just terminate this recording.
Okay.